This brilliant bloodstone amulet has a strange aura about it. As you hold the gem, you think you hear a woman's voice. Welcome to the world of Aeora, a news and lore podcast about the Pillars of Eternity games, as well as Obsidian Entertainment's upcoming release, Avowed. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the World of Aeora. I'm your host, Eric, aka Gingerino. Thanks, everyone, for joining me on another episode as we dive into the history, lore, and game mechanics for Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 as we gear up for the release of Avowed. For those wondering why we pair all of those games together, perhaps you're new to the show, thank you for joining. Happy to have you here. It's because they share the same fantasy world known as Aeora. So, hopefully, by diving into Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2, we can learn a little bit more about the world and therefore have a more nuanced and appreciative understanding of Avowed when it releases, as well as just learn more about a fantasy world that we know and love. In today's episode, I'm going to be talking about a number of different characters from the first Pillars of Eternity game and kind of tie together the connective tissue between all of them. And so it's really going to just be kind of summarizing some of the NPCs that we run into and talk about how they're all connected in some way, shape, or form. This is an episode, I haven't really tried to do an episode like this, so it's going to be interesting. As a heads up, there will be minor spoilers in this episode for the first Pillars of Eternity game. Nothing in the main narrative, nothing at all like that. Just minor things in side quests in the game. Kind of like, if I could contrast what kind of spoiler that you might run into in today's episode, so you can decide if you want to listen or not, is like, did you hear that such and such is a so-and-so? Oh my god, I had no idea. Yeah, right? I know. Scandalous. Okay, anything of that level, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Like, it's not huge, but, you know, still little details. If it's that important to you, then now you know. But yeah, so not major spoilers, just some minor spoilers for some side quests. More like character details for certain NPCs that you might run into. But yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about today. No news to go over regarding Avowed or anything like that. Mark your calendars for June 9th is all I would say. We don't have anything confirmed yet that Avowed is for sure going to be there or what they're going to say if they are. But I'm personally hopeful that they'll make an appearance, that Obsidian will have something about Avowed at the June 9th Xbox showcase. It seems sensible to me. But, you know, I'm not an expert in this field, so what do I know? This is just my best guess. But yeah, with that all said, let's dive into today's episode.
I am trying. I've studied contraptions like this for years, and still the most basic elements elude me.
So we're going to be talking about a number of individuals today within the first Pillars of Eternity game, and talk a little bit about who they are and what their stories are within the game itself, and how they're all connected. We're going to start off today by talking about a person named Aldhelm. Otherwise known as Master Aldhelm Greg, he is a scientist in the field of animancy that you meet within the first Pillars of Eternity games. Animancy, for those unaware, is the science of the soul, or more specifically, the stuff that souls are made of, which is essence. The scientists in animancy, otherwise known as animancers, study the soul, or essence, because that's what souls are made of, and they study it for its properties, how they can manipulate it, what they can do with it, and things like that, what its relationship is to the wheel, which is the name for the cycle of reincarnation that exists in this world, where when you die, your body goes to the afterlife, known as the beyond, and eventually comes back into a new body, you know, reincarnation, or at least this form of reincarnation. And so Master Aldhelm Greg is an animancer in Pillars of Eternity. However, when you run into Aldhelm, he's not necessarily in the best state that people are in. He's not a person that you go to, an animancy lab like at Brackenberry Sanitarium, for example, and run into there and have a nice chit-chat with about the latest things in animancy or something he's learning. No, however, you run into him at the top of a tower known as Tear Nauneth, which I talked about in last week's episode, by the way, located in a district of the city of Defiance Bay, and this district is called Heritage Hill. Again, those unaware, Defiance Bay is the major city settlement in the first Pillars of Eternity game, and being the major city in this game, it has several districts that make up the city itself. There are 5 districts of the city that we can explore as the player character. One of those districts is Heritage Hill. The thing that makes Heritage Hill very interesting is that it is basically full of zombies at this point in time, and they're not actually zombies, at least they don't say it, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, that's what's there. You have a bunch of shambling undead corpses just walking around Heritage Hill. apparently something happened in that district of the city, and everyone there died and then came back to life, but in a not coming back to life kind of a way, in the sense that they are now the undead. It's a big mystery as to why. It's also very dangerous. The local guard have basically just cordoned off the entire area so that people can't get in or out. But you, of course, as the player character in this game, are going into Heritage Hill because, damn it, that's what player characters do. And during your travels through this area, you run into Aldhelm at the top of this tower, where you run into an Ingwithin machine that may or may not have something to do with what's going on here. But again, you find him in less than ideal of a situation. When you first run into him, the description that the game gives you kind of like stops and like describes what it is you're seeing, like your old classic RPGs do. And it says, a man hunches over the strange mechanism, which is, again, the machine that I was talking about at the top of this tower, his spine a sharp ridge rising in his arched back. He's barely clothed in filthy rags, and the patches of skin you see are mottled green. A spoiled stench emanates from him. When he turns and sees you, he snarls and scuttles behind the Audra pedestal. Only his bared teeth seem to have escaped decay. Audra is a unique gemstone in this world that can house the essence of souls within it, but we'll just leave that one for now. His eyes are yellowed and bloodshot, but they flicker with intelligence. He averts his gaze and holds a hand in front of his face. And so this is Aldhelm Greg that you run into. He is one of the victims in Heritage Hill who has succumbed to this undead curse, this malady, if you will. But he still has a remnant of his intelligence and his conscience and his mind with him still. Whereas most of the people that are walking around in Heritage Hill are mindless at this point. They are just running on pure basic instinct of find someone and eat them. Because if you listen to my episode on the undead, which you should go check out because you understand how this all works, the undead basically are decomposing and they don't like that. And the way to stave off decomposition is to consume living flesh, because living flesh is suffused with essence, the stuff souls are made of. And so it kind of staves off that decomposition. But as you get further and further into the decomposition stage, you have less and less of your mind and you're just more instinct. So most of the humanoids you see walking around in Heritage Hill are mindless at this point. They're just, they see something and they go to eat it because they have the instinct to eat it, that it will keep them, well, not alive, but it will stop them from dying more or decaying even more. And Aldhelm Greg has succumbed to this. But what is he doing at the top of this tower? What's he trying to do? Well, Aldhelm is a scholar of animancy, as I mentioned. He worked at a location called Brackenberry Sanitarium, where they study and experiment in the scientific field of animancy. And he's been there for over 15 years, and he was researching this tower known as Tir Nauneth and the machine that's at the top of it when this cataclysm struck Heritage Hill. Together with his assistant Trindig, they were analyzing these ruins and poring over them, trying to unlock the secrets of what was here. But alas, they didn't really learn much. What Aldhelm is trying to do now is he is trying to understand the machinery and the technology of Tir Nauneth so that he can find a way to reverse what has happened here. Now you might be wondering, why has he managed to maintain some of his sanity but others haven't? Well, there's a few things that are coming into play here. One is that he might possibly have had a very strong will, and so that would have helped bind his soul to his body a little better, a little more powerfully. He might have a strong soul, so there could be something along those lines. As well, though, he did hunt down men and women in Heritage Hill and infuse his rotting body with living essence to forestall his madness. At least that's what it says here in the Pillars of Eternity fandom article. He then locked himself in this tower to continue the research. But by 2 months, so get that right, there's at least been 2 months that this entire district has been locked off with the undead just walking around decaying. He is clinging to shreds of sanity and he's completely by himself. And he is trying to figure out how to deactivate this machine, but it is so far done in vain. He has sought the help of someone else in Heritage Hill who has even more of their sanity intact. And that is a person known as Icantha.
A level of humility rarely found in my line of work. Most refreshing.
Icantha is a now-dead scientist in Pillars of Eternity, and she can be found in a house northwest in the Heritage Hill area. So when you explore the map, there's a little house to the northwest of the map, and you can find her there. When you run into her for the first time, the game gives you a description of her, and this is what it says. A woman bends over a roaring fireplace, feeding a splintered chair leg into it. As you get closer, you notice something unnatural about her. A certain pallor to her skin, a lack of movement beneath her flesh, even while her arms execute deft, efficient movements. And then you see the puckered flesh, ragged and bloodless, over her heart. So Icantha is, like everyone else in Heritage Hill, undead. And she is suffering from those effects. But as you can tell from this description, to a significantly lesser degree than Aldhelm is, who is described as having like mottled, rotted, green skin on his body. Now, having mentioned Aldhelm, Aldhelm did reach out to Icantha for help, possibly even before this incident even occurred. But she does not like Aldhelm. She views him as a charlatan, claiming to be a man of science, but hates him completely. But apparently, because he mocked her career a long time ago, because she tries to understand Ingwithin languages and the Ingwithin ruins and things like that. The Ingwithins, if you're not familiar, are an ancient civilization of peoples that no longer exist at the time when Pillars of Eternity is played. And they are the ones responsible for creating these ancient technologies that we see at, like, Tir Nauneth. And she wanted to understand more of their language and a bit more about them as a people group, whereas Aldhelm was more interested in studying the machine itself. And I guess at some point he mocked her for trying to have a career in understanding the Ingwithins rather than understanding the machinery that they left behind. She's one of the few scholars, though, that do understand portion of the language of Ingwithin. You, the player character, can actually learn a little bit from Icantha if you get on her good side. Now, I might have painted her in a pretty decent light there as like, oh, no, you know, she's in a house feeding a fireplace and she's, you know, undead and she was the victim of, you know, mockery in a scientific field. But she's not all that and a bag of chips in terms of positive morality. We'll call it that, depending on your view, I suppose. In my view, you know, taking people and hiding them in your back room and then going and eating one of them to make sure that your flesh desire does not increase to a point of animalistic instinct is not necessarily the most, you know, morally positive thing. But again, that's just in my opinion. I ain't gonna push it on you. But yeah, no, she's totally doing that. So she has a whole bunch of people that she has locked in the back of her house, and she will, on a strict regimen and schedule, go back, take one of them, kill them more, I guess, or just eat them alive, for lack of a better word, to stave off that appetite that the undead have, including people known as people that are captive humans. Because again, there are undead running around, but people have snuck into Heritage Hill in these months that this has gone on, and people have been sent in to investigate, and Icantha has captured a lot of these living people and is now eating them to keep herself more or less alive is not the right word, to keep herself less dead, if that makes sense. So you know, she's kind of tippling in the morality scale a little bit. But, yeah, she's a very powerful person, and she managed to actually avoid the disaster of Heritage Hill in a different way than most. Part of the reason that she has been able to survive as long as she has, or at least stay in this state as long as she has, is because what she did to herself was she basically just killed herself. Which, it sounds weird to say. Like, I avoided becoming undead by dying first, but that's what she did. She avoided this animantic disaster, or at least she's weathered it more, is how this article writes it, by dying. Harnessing what knowledge and talent she had, she stabbed herself in the heart after taking precautions pioneered by another animancer, surviving as an undead vessel. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a sec. But we're going to put a pin in Aldhelm and Icantha, and we're going to actually move on to a different set of people that we can interact with in the game. Dalton and a person named Rowena. Dalton is another character that we run into in Pillars of Eternity. He is in the Copper Lane district of Defiance Bay. Still within the city of Defiance Bay, but within an entirely different district. You can walk by him as a player character, and a little kind of like piece of dialogue comes out that apparently he's an interactable person. So you know us player characters. We see someone who isn't named generic NPC name, who has an actual name, and we go and talk to them because they might have a quest. And sure enough, he does. When you approach him, the game gives you this description. This elderly man paces back and forth, taking short hobbled steps. His gaze is distant, and beneath it are the dark rings of many restless nights. He appears to be having a conversation with someone who isn't there. So Dalton is this old man, and he's kind of succumbing to some mental issues that he is having, perhaps from his old age, perhaps from some of the things he's seen or has dealt with, and we don't really know. This is a person that you can run into just on the streets, this elderly man. Dalton is an old veteran of a group of people known as the Northwatch Rangers. He now lives in the Copper Lane districts of Defiance Bay, but he used to be part of this ranger group. They were a famous adventuring party that over 60 years ago, they were known throughout the Deerwood, and they would track people all around and, you know, take care of them. And you know what I mean by take care of them, right? Like, you're tracking people down. Dalton had a fellow member in the Northwatch Rangers known as Rowena that he was in love with. And in fact, the two were lovers. Although he was also her commander. So, you know, I wonder if that was a... I think that's kind of an HR violation. I don't know what the Northwatch Rangers policies are, but I feel like that's pretty much an HR violation. But hey, whatever. So Rowena and Dalton were lovers. However, Rowena is no longer in the picture. She died around the year 2763 AI. For context, Pillars of Eternity 1 is set at 2823 AI. So some, again, 60 years prior to when this game takes place. She died near a location of a place called Lake of Drowned Tombs, which is really badass sounding, but we do never get to see it in-game. It's just a canon location within this game's universe, but we never do actually get to see it. Sadly, she and a lot of other of the Northwatch Rangers were killed, and Dalton was spared from this cataclysm that happened to the Northwatch Rangers when they were chasing down a particular person of interest. But he is, as far as I understand, was the only survivor. There was this person that they were set to catch, a necromancer, who had left a trail of bodies in his wake. They had gone from a location of Solace Vale to Midwood. Those are two locations. Again, we don't see them in the game, but we know that they exist. And he's tracked this person from these locations. He finally caught up with this necromancer just west of the Lake of Drowned Tombs. This person had tried to flee to the Valian Republics as he was on the run because he was a bad, bad person. We don't like this guy. You know, this is basically what's going on with the Northwatch Rangers. They're hired to take this necromancer down who's trying to escape to the Valian Republics for crimes that he must have committed. But however, they were no match for this person's power, and he did overcome them. Dalton woke up having survived, but found that the entire group of Northwatch Rangers had been killed, including Rowena, his comrade and lover. He had planned a future with her, one filled with adventures and riches, but they were too young to be aware of their mortality. And by the time death had struck, they were separated by the Shroud, which is kind of like the veil between life and death. Recently, however, living in the Copper Lane district of Defiance Bay, he's been getting close to the catacombs area of that district, and he has begun to start hearing voices. But more specifically, he's starting to hear Rowena's voice again, his lover that was killed 60 years ago. Him being close to the age of 80 now, however, he doesn't know what to do about it. He can't handle the catacombs on his own, and that's why he calls to you, the player character, to help, to investigate what's going on down there. And before we dive into more about what's happening on their story, I want to pan back again and look at a couple of other NPCs before kind of tying this all together. There are two other individuals that I want to focus on. And if you've played Pillars of Eternity very thoroughly, you're probably already familiar with the person that I am kind of like leading this all up towards. But we're going to talk first about another animancer known as Modred. Modred is an animancer. You can be found in the Brackenberry Sanitarium, which is in the Brackenberry district of Defiance Bay. Again, I'm not going to explain how the districts work, so you get it now. When you first run into Modred, he's described as such. An animancer scribbles feverishly on a parchment scroll while his free hand dances through the air, counting off unseen objects. His lips move in silent discourse. He is considered a savanna human, which means he's actually probably from the Ishadamil Plains, which is a very interesting area. I haven't really talked a lot about that yet. I'd love to do an episode on that. Probably will soon. Modred studies Wicks, which I won't get into too much detail about, but their Wicks are essentially children that when they hit adolescence that had animal souls implanted to them went basically feral. You might think like, how did that happen? I don't have all the time to get into it. I do an episode on the undead. I do an episode on the Hollowborn Crisis. If you want to hear more about it, go ahead. Short version is that in the Deerwood recently, within Pillars of Eternity, a lot of kids were being born without souls, and everyone's like, what are we going to do? We need to solve this problem. I mean, not just because, you know, kids are being born without souls, which is a tragedy, but also the next generation is not being born. That's a problem. So people are trying to solve this problem. One solution that animancers came up with was to implant the essence of animals into these babies that were being born. And it seemed to work. The essence acts more like a battery in a lot of senses in that particular way. And it seemed like they were like normal children again. And they were able to eat and drink and talk and skip and jump and dance and be merry and be sad and all the other kind of things. But however, something about hitting adolescence changed inside of these kids, and they turned into these creatures known as Wicts, which is essentially like kind of like zombies, but much worse than the other zombies we were talking about. So anyways, Modred is trying to find a way to cure these Wicts of what has happened to them and turn them back into normal kids again. That's what he is studying. He's worked alongside other animancers in the sanitarium. In fact, he's been working there for several years with one person named Helig of Thane. However, Modred and Helig had a bit of a falling out because Modred viewed Helig's deeds particularly heinous. He looked at the way that Helig, as an animancer, approached his work as a scientist as completely immoral and absolutely awful. So the two of them kind of, you know, they have an academic rivalry going on, but behind the scenes, Modred actually views him as someone who is like a complete criminal. Like, he doesn't think he deserves to live is basically what is going on here. And actually, that's what he ends up doing. Modred ends up cutting Helig's throat and throwing his body away. Apparently, Helig had been torturing souls in the name of science. He had been flaying the essence off of Glanfathans, who are the native peoples of the area, for his own amusements. In Modred's own words, if the public realized what was going on, the sanitarium would be taken apart brick by brick until there was nothing else. So to protect not only himself and other people, but also the Institute of the Brackenberry Sanitarium and the scientific field of animancy at large, Modred did what he thought was right, and he disposed of Helig by killing him and getting rid of the body. But there's a bit more going on with that story there than meets the eye. And to understand that fully, we need to talk about one last person known as Pangrim. Pangrim is not someone we can run into in the game of Pillars of Eternity. He's mentioned only. So he's just a person out of history. However, he is a notable person within history. And much like a lot of the other NPCs we meet today, other than Dalton and Rowena, I suppose, he is a animancer. So he studies animancy. But his name is associated to particularly dark sections of animancy. Well, and positive. Like, he's probably done a lot of good things as well, but the stuff that we know Pangrim for are particularly dark sections of the history of animancy. He is publicly reviled by many, but he's also privately lauded as a hero and genius by some. His history is at turns revolutionary, horrific, and mysterious. See, Pangrim was fascinated, some might say obsessed, with the concept of animancy. He dedicated his entire life to understanding everything about it. He would constantly travel to Ir Glanfoth and the Deerwood to visit Ngwythan ruins, which is very dangerous because the Ngwythan ruins are considered sacred by the Glanfathan tribe, so it's actually considered illegal to go onto those sites. Maybe he had permission, I don't really know. But anyways, he was obsessed with animancy and learning more about the soul. What Pangrim was obsessed with doing, however, within the field of animancy, was he was trying to discern a way in which somebody could gain immortality. He believed that by scientific method in the field of animancy, that he could discover and unlock the key to immortality, which would, you know, change everyone in the world that as we know it to gods in their own way. You know, they could live forever, and they could gain limitless power. Who knows what other kind of fantasy this guy was working towards, but this was what he was experimenting towards. And so he begun his experimentations. We don't know the specifics of his experiments, and so truly we'll never understand how he developed his method or how he reached the outcomes he did, but we do know the consequences of his experiments. Apparently he had asked for live subjects and help with a dangerous experiment that might change their life or end it. And they were encouraged to apply, especially people who were already dying, because, I mean, what do you have to lose at that point, right? His response was overwhelming, and Pangrim had his pick of numerous willing people, or as the article here words it, his pick of numerous willing bodies. So referring to the patients in the experiment as bodies rather than people, but that is how the game also describes it. He did have a breakthrough, however. He managed to find a way to fix the soul to its body, anchoring it to the body so that it wouldn't leave the body at death. Because how it's supposed to work is when you die in this world, your body and your soul uncouple. They detach in some way. And the soul leaves, goes to the beyond, and eventually comes back, enters into a new body. I'm not really sure on the mechanics of how it works, but that is how it works, metaphysically speaking. And that was the goal that Pangram had, to try to remove death. What if the soul didn't leave the body? And that's what he worked to do. And he apparently discovered a way to do just that. So he had discovered eternal life. But as we'll learn, or if you already know the game, or you've listened to my episodes where we talk about things like this, there was far more consequences than Pangram understood.
If you find your trail has run cold, come to me with whatever you have. There is much I may be able to do for you.
Pangram's research and life's work had resulted in the greatest single discovery that animancy could hope for. His findings were published and quickly spread throughout Velia, which is one of the old empires in the world. It's as old as Aedir, the place that your player character from Avowed is going to be coming from, but it's since collapsed. But it's been spread through Velia and beyond. Some groups, such as the Wudican Church, which worship the god Wudica, goddess of law and rightful rulership and vengeance, among other things, decried his work as nothing more than blasphemy and heresy. But still, everyone wanted the chance at immortality. However, as I've already mentioned, there was definitely a cost to this. And as it turns out, it became quickly apparent. When you simply restrain the soul to the body, even though the body has died and the soul is connected to it and that's energizing that body as a vessel, your body is still dead, right? So the body itself is dead and it continues to decay. And since it has a soul attached to it, that means that that soul is now trapped in this decaying body. So the body will continue to decay and continue to decay, and the soul will devolve and warp alongside it. And as a result, they develop this insatiable hunger for the living flesh of other creatures. Because as I've mentioned, living flesh is suffused with essence, and essence staves off this decomposition. And that's what we see with Icantha and Aldheim and the other undead that are walking around in Heritage Hill. And really, you could say that it's Pangram's discoveries and his work in this scientific field that showed how this works in Heritage Hill. And so what we see there, it's not the direct result of Pangram, obviously, but that is the kind of thing that he ended up discovering. People were not a fan of this. Animancy is already a very contentious topic in the world of Aeora because a lot, you know, you're messing with people's souls, right? So people have a lot to say about it. Like, oh, it's the future of all the people of the world. It's going to be the scientific pursuit of the next millennia, blah, 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 blah. Or people on the other side saying that you're messing with consequences that could be eternal for some people. And this is an area of the world that we are not meant to meddle in, or that we have no right meddling in, or that we don't have the competence to be meddling in. And there is sound reasoning and validity behind all arguments on all sides. His works were collected and burned as a result, which is why we don't know exactly what happened in the scientific experiment. We don't know anything that happened. And Pangram simply vanished while he was being hunted. Pangram didn't do this all on his own. The scientific experimentation that he was undergoing is simply too much for one person to have to do. He required a lab assistant. Think, you know, Walter and Jesse from Breaking Bad, except you're experimenting with the soul and how to couple it to the body forever so that you can be immortal. And Pangram did, in fact, take on an apprentice. And that apprentice was one Helig of Theon. Now, that name might sound familiar to you, because I've already brought it up when we're talking about Modred. Helig of Theon is the person that Modred despised because of his techniques within the scientific field of animancy. And Helig was also the person that the Northwatch Rangers were sent to hunt down after Pangram's works were considered heretical or dangerous and everything was burned. People were sent after them, and that was the Northwatch Rangers, including Dalton and Rowena. But Helig was too strong for the Northwatch Rangers and easily dispatched the entire group. He left Dalton to survive, and he implanted Rowena's soul into a necklace that he keeps as a trophy on him. So she's been trapped on this necklace on the person of Helig for around 60 years now, and Dalton has no idea. But that's why he's been hearing her voice in the catacombs, because that is where Helig is residing. That's where Modred planted the body. And it was Helig, the necromancer, that Iconatha learned the method of how to keep her soul attached to her body. She used the methods that he had pioneered so that she could live forever, even though we know what happens to those who do things in such a way. And so Helig is the person that is connected to all of these individuals. He's a person that you can interact with in the game of Pillars of Eternity 1. When you run into him, the game gives you a description of a lone figure in tattered robes shuffles across the chamber, muttering under its breath. As you approach, the figure halts and swivels its head toward you. Its haggard visage is a labyrinth of wrinkles and sores overgrown by a moss-like beard. Helig is the former assistant of Pangrim, as we've already discussed. He was taken on as an assistant during Pangrim's research, and their experimentation eventually reached the conclusion that we have already discussed. Afterwards, he was hunted by numerous parties, and the Northwatch Rangers tracked him from Solace Vale to Midwood and eventually caught up with him at the Lake of Drowned Tombs, where he killed everyone in Dalton's crew, as I've mentioned. And from there, he went to Defiance Bay to try to start doing animancy again in the Brackenberry Sanitarium, which was kind of a safe haven for animancers at the time. But his compatriot Modred did not approve of his methods and actually thought that his methods were so heinous that Modred took justice into his own hands, which vigilante justice is kind of a staple of the Deerwooden culture, by the way, so this isn't necessarily an unheard of thing in this area of the world. Modred took it into his own hands to kill Helig and dump his body in the Copperlane catacombs. Helig had planned for this eventuality, and through a combination of Ingwithin techniques, Ingwithins being that ancient race from millennia ago that are no longer here, and his own research, he permanently attached his soul to his body and prevented the decay of his mind. And he continues his research to this day under the catacombs of Copperlane and looking for a way to achieve revenge. Now, this is what it says here in the Pillars of Eternity Wikipedia article. However, when I go to the citation reference for his body and soul being permanent and there's no decay on his mind, the citation is just Helig itself. So without having to replay the entire game up to that point or look up a video, which I'll have to do in my off hours, I suppose, I'll try to confirm that fact. But if that is the case, then that means that Helig has essentially turned himself into a lich. And there are other people in the world who have done such a thing. Consulhot, for example, is someone who is also a lich. He, through Ingwithin techniques, inscribing runes into his skull, he's basically made himself undead in such a way that his body doesn't decay. And that's where Helig is now, unless you, of course, as the player character, kill him. I don't remember if you can. I don't think I tried. I'm sure you can. I'm almost positive you can, so yeah, up to you what you want to do as the player character. And that description that you heard at the start of today's episode was the description of the Soulward Amulet. And that's the amulet that Helig has on his person, which contains the soul of Rowena, which you can get from him or take off his body, which is how I remembered that you can kill him, and bring that back to Dalton as part of that side quest. Those are the stories that I want to talk about in today's episode. Now, what was the point behind this episode, and what might this have to do with a vow?
Is an oath worth the weight of a crown?
The purpose of today's episode was twofold. In one sense, I really just wanted to share the lore and stories of all these different characters within Pillars of Eternity 1, within the City of Defiance Bay. I was just kind of perusing through the Pillars of Eternity fandom articles, as I am wanting to do after I do a regular recording or I'm researching for an idea. And I realized that the threads of all of these different people throughout the history of this game's world, as well as the actual game itself, all had a connective point at Helig of Theyan. And it really made me just have an appreciation for the game and the writing that goes on there. And so that was the point behind today's episode, is just kind of like looking at the lore of these people and bringing them all together in one focus and fleshing out the world a little bit more, but ultimately giving a praise to Obsidian for that kind of writing. Drawing connections between NPCs and there being connective tissues between side quests and having a real, like, small world kind of feel. You know, a 6 degrees of separation kind of idea. Like, how is this person connected to that person? And I just think that it was really, really qualitatively done. And what this has to do with Avowed? Well, I mean, there's always the chance, I guess, that if Obsidian canonizes some Pillars of Eternity's story, then maybe we'll run into one of these NPCs. Like, who knows? Maybe there's a chance that Helig survives everything and he moves to Living Lands for whatever reason. He's attracted to the Dream Scourge for his research purposes. So maybe we could run into Helig, but I doubt it for some reason. I just don't feel like, you know, like there's a lot of NPCs that could end up in the Living Lands, and why Helig You know, it's not out of the question, I suppose, but I just doubtful of it for my own reasons. The more important thing that I want to draw attention to is just the way that the World of Eora is written and the quality of writing that comes from Obsidian. I mean, obviously, Pillars of Eternity was 2015, and that was probably a largely different development staff than we have at Obsidian now. I don't actually know that, technically speaking, but I imagine there must be some personnel changes between now and then. But still, there's a quality of writing and nuance that we've come to expect from Obsidian, and I think that we do still see. And obviously, Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 are CRPGs. There's a lot of reading involved, and so, you know, descriptions and things like that, and as well as how the characters are related, are way different than how you would set them up in a first-person action RPG. So I'm not saying that it's going to be exactly to that level, but it's just that for a first-person action RPG, it's going to have that same quality in its respective genre, if that makes sense. So don't expect it to be like Pillars of Eternity. I think that's one of the biggest foibles a lot of people make. But just that, you know, if you see how good that Obsidian is at writing characters and making compelling stories and narratives in this genre, I'm excited to see how they will do that in this other form of the RPG genre as well. That's everything for today's episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. I'm still plinking away at The Outer Worlds, which is kind of like my little practice game to see how quickly I could get through that while also, you know, developing content, since it's supposed to be the same size as Avowed. I do occasionally load up another game for like a little session here or there. Like I check something out on Game Pass, for example. A Little Kitty Big City, I think, is coming out soon. And I know that sounds weird, but I'm actually looking forward to playing that. It sounds like something pretty relaxing. But yeah, I'm pretty much just focusing on The Outer Worlds right now. Nothing else to talk about show-related right now. There's no real extra news to go over. If you have questions about the show or about the lore of the world or anything about Avowed or a topic suggestion, worldofeora@gmail.com. There's a few of you who have sent me topic ideas that I haven't done yet. I've heard them, and I plan on doing them. One of which, though, I just don't have any idea how to approach it. So, yeah, but I definitely hear those things. So send me topic ideas. Send me your thoughts. If you want to follow my show on Twitter, the Twitter handle is @WorldOfEora. And if you want to support the show directly, you can do so at ko-fi.com/WorldOfEora. So that's ko-fi.com/WorldOfEora if you're interested in supporting the show at all. It's not there. It's not like a thing that I'm expecting. It's just there for people who want to do that kind of thing. Anyways, that's it, everyone. Thanks for joining me on today's episode. Just looking at the connective threads and narratives between a number of NPCs from the first Pillars of Eternity game, all centralizing around this one character, Heligothian, evil necromancer dude, who we probably won't see in Avowed, but there's always the chance. But it's been a fun episode to do, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm your host, Eric, aka Gingerino, and I'll see you guys next time.